Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in New York City and attempted suicide three times as a teen. In 1960, as a scruffy teenager in dirty jeans, lost in Amsterdam, a chance meeting changed his life. Today, he's an internationally known sociologist, educator, radio and TV personality, who has spoken to over 2 million people, asking them to examine their motives, goals, and feelings, and then make meaningful decisions about their futures. His name, Jim Tooman, and I'm Jack Crisul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Jim Tooman, an internationally known sociologist, educator, radio and TV personality. Jim, welcome. It's an honor.
Jack, and it's an honor for me as well.
Can we start by you telling us about your childhood and your parents?
I grew up in a home that, you know, was extremely demanding, and love was always based on some degree of performance, and so I performed. And as I performed, there was always this fear, there's an axe hanging over your head, what happens one day if I don't perform, will the love be taken away? And so there was always this incredible void of loneliness and pain that I lived up to. And I was, you know, great at the performance realm. I always, you know, was a high achiever, always excelled, and consequently, you know, was always getting some degree of praise. But I would have given anything. I was a trophy kid, Jack. My parents would bring me out and they would say, I'd like to introduce my son the athlete, I'd like to introduce my son the scholar, I'd like to introduce, you know, my son the class leader. And all I wanted them to do was to say, I'd like to introduce my son Jim.
You attempted suicide three times as a teenager.
Correct.
Why?
When you live under that axe and you wonder if love is going to be taken away, there's an incredible aloneness to that. And in that aloneness is such a really profound, deep experience of almost a surrender that you're not worthy, that you're not valued, and that you really have no meaning to your life.
If there's a listener out there, mom or dad, that says, Jim, everything I've ever achieved is because of hard work and effort. That's how I was raised. I'm very demanding of my kids. I'm doing it because I love them. I want them to be successful. What do you say?
I say to people, your kids need to hear that you're proud of them, regardless of whatever station they reach in their lives, that you're proud of them, and that in your demands of them, you also allow them to experience what losing is, and, you know, what is it about our lives that is not always at the winning mode? I mean, we're a win-lose culture, and consequently, years ago, I remember teaching a course in the Detroit Public Schools called Losing Doesn't Mean You're a Loser. And I got the idea. I was at the 84 Olympics in California, and I saw people in a track and field mode line up 20 at a time for long-distance races. And I thought only one will ever be remembered or get a gold medal. And all the others, were they really losers? They got up and trained every morning. You know, they worked as hard as they could to, you know, to achieve. But because we're such a win-lose culture, you know, suicide becomes an option in that win-lose perspective. And we allow that to happen. I mean, we've created that, and the people that lose always feel like, wow, you know, I'm worthless. I have nothing. I'm not valued. You know, I don't feel, you know, that I can contribute anything to my life or someone else's life.
It's 1960. You're in Amsterdam, and you talk about a defining moment in your life. Can you share that with us?
I worked on a freighter, jump ship in Antwerp, Belgium, lived in Europe, and toured all over. And I was in Amsterdam, and I came out of the bus station, and there was a man. I went to ask directions. I was looking for a friend of mine, and he said, I don't know where it is. He said, he was probably in his 80s at the time. He said, I don't know where it is. He said, but, you know, jump in and let me see what I can find. And I have to say, conservatively, he drove around for an hour and a half. And he finally found it. It was kind of a out-of-the-way street. And I remember this so clearly, and it's many, many years ago. I remember swinging my backpack over my shoulder, and I leaned in as I stood outside, and I said to this man, thank you. I cannot tell you how kind this was. And he came back with a retort to me that really was inspirational, and he said, isn't this what it's all about? Aren't we on this earth to really help each other? And from that moment, I knew that where my path, you know, was, and I don't know this man's name. I know he's probably not on this earth. And yet this man in a single sentence with an hour and a half commitment changed my life.
And what did you realize your mission in life was?
Well, I used to leave my apartment in New York City, and I'd walk out, and you'd walk onto the streets, and, you know, there'd be somebody screaming at the top of their lungs on the street corner, or there'd be, you know, the prostitutes would be out, people would be laying in the gutter. And my family always told me, don't get involved. And, you know, I learned through this man that the only way, you know, as a culture, that we are going to survive is to be involved.
You got a degree from Michigan State in
Correct.
Sociology.
Mm-hmm.
You went to work for a couple of Fortune 500 companies. You worked for the Shrine Circus. You were a rodeo rider. You were a rock group roadie. You tried so many things. What do you say to young people that are trying to figure out what their mission in life is?
Well, I came out of Michigan State, and I thought the world was waiting for me because I had been real active on campus. And I went to work in the first 18 months for six Fortune 500 companies. And I was doing it more to please my parents than and to please, you know, my friends than really to live in my own integrity. And the greatest gift, I think, for young people on, you know, to be able to do is to live out who they are, not to create a situation based on other people's input of how they should be, which is many times how we live, you know, we live our lives. We live our lives by looking at what others interpret we should be doing, and then we create that. And then we discover how empty that is, because as other people change, then we're forced to change.
We're talking to Jim Tooman, who many, many times has been described as a champion for kids' voices. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Rasula.
We're talking to Jim Tooman, who has spoken to over 2 million people in over 1,500 schools, mainly young people. Jim, what's the basic message you try to get across?
My basic message, Jack, which is universal, has nothing to do with age or demographics, is that life has no guarantees. Life changes in a phone call. I mean, for so many of the listeners out there, I know you can identify with this, that you could be sailing along one day and all of a sudden get a phone call and your life shifts. It changes. You know, someone passes suddenly. You know, you have an accident. You have a whole different crisis mode. And so my whole message is tell somebody you care, live in the moment, and have no regrets as you move through your life, because not only have you lived in the moment, but you've shared your feelings and you've been able, you know, to love to the max. That's, you know, it's so simple. I mean, it's a no-brainer. But we spend so much energy and time, trying to, to build our estates, and we spend so much energy and time, creating, things that don't bring us fulfillment. And I do an interesting thing in my program. I have kids tear up money. And then I'll stand there for sometimes, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and I'll tear up parts of a bill so they'll remember people first, things second, and they'll never be alone in their lives. And I'll be going through an airport or a mall someplace in the country, and a kid will run up now in their 30s and maybe sometimes even in their early 40s, and they'll flip open their wallet and they say, "Hey, Jim, do you remember me? I saved this, and I wanted you to know, how much I look at it and how many times your words, come back to me around, if this is the only important thing in your life, if this is the only thing that has meaning, there's never going to be enough of it."
You were the Michiganian of the Year in 2000.
Correct.
And the person that nominated you said, "Jim Tooman's singular mission is to give kids a voice to tell adults what they want and need so we adults can make intelligent choices about the future and help them." Jim, what do kids really want and need?
Kids want to feel safe and valued and loved, and it's a basic thing. So often we feel like we have to throw stuff at the kids, and if you ask the bottom line, the longest program that I ever did, which is the sharing part of my program as a speaker, longest program I ever did was at one of the Grosse Pointe schools, went on 11 hours, and kids came to the mic and they talked about what they needed from their parents, and they needed unconditional love and unconditional acceptance. They needed their parents to look at them for who they were, not what the expectation was of the parent. And so that creates a safety. If you look at that from an unconditional perspective, from a kid's perspective, kids feel safe in that environment when a parent can say, "Look, it doesn't matter how badly you screw up, you can always come home. You can always come back to me."
For most of us, giving a speech is one of the hardest things we would ever do in our life. It seems to be so easy for you. You've given thousands of speeches. What advice do you give?
I never sleep the night before a talk. I grew up as a very, very shy kid. And I never thought that I would ever be a professional speaker. And sometimes, as I have shared with kids often, every speaker shares the things that they need to learn and experience. And I'm no exception. But I always say to kids or people I mentor or speakers, because I have hundreds every year that call me to ask me if I can help them grow in the speaking industry. And I always say, people want to see your heart first. Then they want to know what you know. So the old adage, we don't want to know what you know until we know that you care, is a very profound adage for speakers. And so often speakers feel like they have to cram information and they have to cram statistics. And people just want to see your heart. They just want to see your heart. Again, sometimes the simplicity of this defies people.
How do you explain we're all so busy chasing the almighty dollar, achieving, building, growing, and then when some catastrophic event occurs, 9/11, the blackout in half of America, Katrina, we reach out to each other immediately. Why do we do that?
Because there's a common unknown. And in this common unknown, everything is leveled, and we all realize how much we need each other. And then, like every blackout, when the lights come back on, we go and recede back to where we were before. Because the sustaining part of this is only in the moment. When we had a blackout here in Michigan, there were neighbors that never had talked to each other that was sitting and cooking in the backyard on a makeshift grill and sharing their food and sharing. What a beautiful concept. We had the Super Bowl here, you know, just a few weeks ago, and I came downtown, and I brought my fiance down, and people were kind, and they were loving, and they couldn't do enough for you, and they were caring. Well, sometimes, Jack, people get afraid, and, you know, it's like I put myself out, I'm allowing myself to be vulnerable and open and real, and somebody's going to come back and hurt me. And in many cases, unfortunately, that's where people recede back to.
And why is it that we just revert back to the old way?
Because in that fear is, you know, bottom line self-protectiveness. And there used to be a landmark case in New York called the Kitty Genovese case. And Kitty Genovese was stabbed to death in a grassy knoll surrounded by, you know, half a dozen high-rise, you know, low-income high-rise buildings. And hundreds of people watched this. And not one person called the police. Not one person reported this. Because, you know, again, it was in their own self-protective arena. You know, if I call, I'm going to be involved. They're going to bring me down. They're going to want me to make a report. You know, I may have to testify. You know, my life may be threatened. I mean, a lot of things that unfortunately, as a culture, we have done self-taught, you know, exercises to create this kind of cocoon of our lives.
We're talking to Jim Tooman. When we come back, we'll ask him about suicide and youth. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Jim Tooman. 3 years ago, there was an article, Jim, that said close to 3 million Americans aged 12 to 17 considered suicide in 2000. Over a million of them actually attempted suicide. Why such an epidemic?
Jack, there is a sense of hopelessness that I have not seen in all my years of touring the world as a speaker. And the playing field's changed. Cyberbullying is, you know, it has come to a, you know, an incredible peak. We have a shame-based culture. Oral and anal sex are predominant in schools now. Flatlining has come back, where you press down on the trachea and take a kid to the other side, and that's come back. I just did a big story, you know, a brand new way of kids to kill themselves, but it isn't brand new. It's been around for a long, long time. You know, rave parties are a way of life, and because of this sense of hopelessness, young people, you know, their idea of seeing tomorrow is not doable. And I remember getting a letter from a young woman that had attempted, and she said, "I didn't realize the difference between death and disappearance." She said, "I really didn't want to die." She said, "I just wanted the pain to go away." And the pain could be in the form of isolation, it could be in the form of rejection, it could be in the form of peer pressure, it could be in a number of different forms. But regardless of whatever form it is, it's really challenging for young people to stand their ground, to be who they are, and in the face of rejection, because I've said so often to parent groups, a kid would rather take their life than not be accepted. And unfortunately, as part of the wave of our culture in schools today, kids view this as an option.
Surveys show that girls are almost twice as likely as boys to think about and attempt suicide. Why?
There's a certain cruelty and girls, you know, there's an insensitivity, and I don't want to generalize this and take this into a universal place, but there was a website recently been torn down. It was called Girls I Hate, and basically it was girls focusing on one girl and virtually destroying that girl online. And so in this, you know, highly technical culture that, you know, technological culture that we have created, the downside of this is that you can also, you know, destroy a human being anonymously. And that's, you know, and so in that website, 6, 7, 8 girls may gang up on another girl and be able to, you know, talk about them and spread rumors about them and make them feel less than.
We're talking to Jim Tooman, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're talking to Jim Tooman, who's often been referred to as a real-life Santa Claus. Jim, if one or both of my parents treat me with conditional love, what should I say? What should I do?
First of all, you can't expect someone to be real if you're not real. And the more vulnerable and open you are as a person, the more you will have an opportunity to mirror for your parents a model that they can adopt and that they can look at. Because we're always struggling with the image. It's always the gift to see ourselves as others see us. And in some cases, you know, in particular, parents don't have a clue that their love is conditional. They're just doing what was modeled for them by their parents, which in turn was modeled by, you know, future, you know, past generations. And just, it's a legacy of pain sometimes that is handed down. And it behooves every young person to stand up and say, you know, I'm not going to accept this, that I'm going to look for an alternative so that generationally, you know, as I pass, that I'm going to pass on the seeds of really true acceptance and true love and true understanding.
If because of my upbringing, whatever, I'm consumed with anger and hate, what should I do?
I do an interesting exercise for my, you know, my, in particular for my adult audiences and, you know, many cases for my youth audiences. I take an empty glass and I say to people, now, you know, here's how we all started. We have no history. We have no background. And then I take a pitcher of water and I start pouring the water into the glass and I say, now, here's all the hurt and anger and resentment and betrayal and violation that's happened in our lives. And I ask my audience, what's going to happen if I continue to pour? And obviously everybody says it'll overflow. And I hold this glass up that has no room, not a millimeter of room. And I say now to my audience, now where's there room for love in here? Where is there room for love? And if all of us, deep down inside, bottom line, want to love and be loved, where is there room for this? And what do we need to do? We need to empty out some of this pain, and we need to give a little bit of room through, you know, understanding and through, you know, just the ability to be able to forgive people. Give that little bit of room a chance to fill up with love.
I once read that the only thing God can't do is put love into a heart that's filled with hate.
There's no room.
Did you ever make peace with your dad?
It was the greatest moment of my life and helped me move forward. I always felt a lot of anger and resentment. My dad was just never there for me. And he was a workaholic dad and just never was able to, you know, to spend any time, never gave me encouragement, certainly never gave me understanding. And in his demands, diminished who I was. I called him up after I got the Michiganian Award, and I said, you know, Pop, I said, I got this kind of neat award. I'd love it if you would be able to be here. And he lived in California, and he was 87, and I kind of set myself up for the fact he wasn't going to be able to make it. And I kind of prefaced the invitation by also saying to him, well, listen, it's a long way, you know, you don't have to worry about feeling obligated to do this. Anyway, I sent him a copy of the Sunday insert, and 3 or 4 weeks later calls me up and says, you know, I'd like to be there. Well, I rearranged, you know, my schedule and my table and everything, and he flew in, and I was taking him around to people that really didn't know him but had just heard about him. And my dad was saying to everybody, he was saying, you know, I wish my son had gone into business with me. And why wasn't he more like his brother, Robert? My brother's a multimillionaire. And why do you choose kids? It's not even an occupation. And on and on and on. And I looked at this guy and I said, I can't believe you're doing this. You came all this way to put me down, which is what I've heard most of my life. Anyway, the night of the dinner, I was the last to speak alphabetically, and I was in some really kind of shooter company that night, Jack Smith and Barry Gordy and Emmanuel Stewart and Tom Izzo. And I remember saying to everybody in the room, I'm the richest person here tonight. My father's here. I said, Pop, stand up. And he stood up, and I said, you know, I know you didn't approve of me. I know you wanted me to be more like Robert. I know that, you know, that your dreams and goals for me that I never fulfilled. And then I finished up, and I can't explain to you, Jack, why I said this, but it just came to me. I said to my dad, and Pop, I'm going to keep trying harder, and maybe someday you'll really be proud of me. And I looked across the room, and here was this 87-year-old man, hard-nosed guy. I saw him start to cry, and I couldn't believe it. And I walked off the podium, and I put my arms around him, and they gave him like a standing ovation. I mean, here was an 87-year-old man, you know, showing his feelings and showing, you know, that moment meant something to him. But I put my arms around him, and his head bounced on the side of my chest in sobs. And I knew for the first time in my whole life, I knew he was really proud of me. And I never saw my father again. He died, you know, about 4 weeks later on Father's Day. And I never, ever got a chance to, you know, to share with him all of what that meant to me. But it brought my life full circle. It was the completion of the circle. It was the forgiveness that I really needed. And most of all for me, it was the freeing moment that gave me permission to go to my mother to do it, to my brother, to friends, to other family members, and the ability to release and surrender and forgive is not for the other person, it's for you.
You have a CD, and it's entitled, The Best Things in Life Aren't Things.
Title speaks for itself. For all of us, you know, when push comes to shove, what's really important to us is relationships, and relationships where people, you know, create that safety for us to be who we are and to grow who we are, and also to, you know, help us expand by believing in us. And it's not about the exchange of the material parts of our lives. It's about the exchange of our hearts, heart to heart.
Time after time, people who have been in a home and because of fire or hurricane have had to leave immediately. After the fact, they give advice. They say, don't take the jewelry, don't take the furniture, the clothes. If you can, take one thing, and that's take the pictures. Why?
Well, the pictures, you know, are the, you know, the living proof that we existed, that we didn't just pass through and become anonymous. The pictures ground us in some history, some memories. They're the ability of a legacy to pass on. And consequently, you know, because, you know, we're all going to pass away, and the challenge for us 10 minutes after we're gone, the people that love us are still going to love us and remember us and hold us in our hearts, in their hearts. And the people that don't, you know, they're not going to get up and say, oh my gosh, I love Jim Tooman. And everybody else in the world is going to keep on trucking. So it's this commitment to be able to share your heart, who you are inside, with another human being. That's a lifelong connectedness.
We're talking to Jim Tooman, who's the founder of an organization entitled Jimmy's Kids. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Jim Tooman. Jim, can you talk to us about Jimmy's kids?
I got a chance in 1989 to play Santa Claus at the Dewey School at Martin Luther King and the Lodge across from the projects. And these were young people that were in wheelchairs, walkers, closed head injuries, various disability situations. And I fell in love with these kids. They were soft, they were kind. And next year I brought some friends, and the year after I brought more friends, and the year after we supplied the toys. And as this started to snowball, it grew and grew and grew. This last year we did 25,000 plus kids. We raised close to 100,000 toys, and we served 38 different agencies, 31 schools, through communities and schools. And we were able to, you know, it's the joy for me of seeing in the moment the response of people. But probably the greatest experience happens on Christmas morning. This is our third year in a row of doing this. This year, over 40 people came down in what was essentially really bad weather, sleet and rain. And I drive a truckload of toys this year down to Southwest Detroit, and we divide the toys up into the SUVs and cars that we ask people to bring their own vehicles. And we put a Santa Claus in each vehicle and a bilingual person. And then we seek out homes where families have not had a Christmas. And we knock on the door and we show up, and the joy that this experience elicits is so incredible. And every person who comes down there to participate on Christmas morning, a time when, you know, you're into more accumulation than you are in necessarily giving, the joy that's elicited from these people is just phenomenal. We had a woman with terminal cancer. We had a couple that was going through a divorce that needed to reconcile. We had a man that lost his wife in November of 50 years of marriage. We had people bring their families, their kids, so that they could experience, you know, the meaning and the giving and the love. And I remember walking into a home where there was probably six or seven kids, and they were all standing around the stove. The heat had gone out, and they had no toys, and they had piled on layers of clothing. And I remember coming in and seeing the expression on these kids' faces, and on this, the mother, she walked back to the couch and put her head in her hands and just sobbed for what has to be 10, 15 minutes. I mean, we all tried to console her and everything like that. It was so moving to experience that. And I encourage listeners to go on my website, jimmyskids.com, to go to my email, jim@jimtooman.com or jim@jimmyskids.com, and volunteer for next Christmas morning. Because this is an annual tradition now that is going to do nothing but continue to escalate.
You've spoken all over the world. You've met people all over the world. The happiest people in life, what do they have in common?
It's an amazing facet. They can see the pony in the pile. They are able to... I mean, I know people that have got millions in the bank that consider themselves poor. And I know people that have got hundreds or thousands in the bank that perceive that they're rich. And it is so much in the perception of looking at facets of life. And we can train ourselves to do this. We can, you know, my friend, you know, Michael Wickett is an expert in being able to pass along this philosophy that, you know, that attitude really helps us create a sense of hope inside of us and gives us an opportunity. See, I believe that there's never a sold-out concert. I've lived that philosophy. And Woody Allen once said, the magic of living is showing up. It's not about staying home and waiting for everything to come to you. It's showing up. So the combined showing up with a great attitude and the idea in mind that you won't ever be shut out, to me is the best gift you can give yourself.
What do you say to a dad, a child, even a mom, who finds it impossible to say, I love you?
I really basically say to them, look in the mirror, ask yourself what you need to hear at a bottom line, and then you become the person that gives it. And you'll discover that in giving it, you continue to kind of peel away the layers of someone's heart until they actually have an opportunity to say it to you. But unfortunately, we're all waiting for the other person to initiate. And in that waiting, that we do the dance. I can tell you, and for many of you who are listening to this tonight, I can tell you that my mother died never, ever, ever seeing her grandchildren or talking to them. And they were in their late 20s when she died. And only because of my mother's stubbornness and pride that kept her from saying, I love you. And those are magic words.
You spend your whole life talking to kids. You're centered on suicides, etc. With all these issues in the world, are you still hopeful?
Oh, gosh, yes. You know, again, what I just shared with the audience, you know, I have to live out myself. So in my philosophy, there's never a sold-out concert. I always look for the sense of hope. And in that hope is, you know, has been magic for me. My experiences in my life, the people that I've met, the hearts that have been opened up. I had a woman in a Red Robin restaurant that a waitress came up to me and she said, you know, what would you like to drink? And I said, I'd like a Coke. And she said, well, we only have Pepsi products. And I said, well, I really wanted a Coke, you know. And she said, she looked at me kind of quizzically and she said, do you really want a Coke? And I said, yeah. I said, I really would love a Coke. And she said, but I understand. And she said, well, let me see what I can do to make that happen. And I said, well, what are you talking about? She says, there's a 7-Eleven across the street. Let me run over and get you a Coke. And I got up and gave her a hug, and I said, just the gesture alone is so powerful. 5 minutes later, it was June, a couple of years ago, she comes running back in there, beads of sweat on her forehead, on a tray or two Cokes. I left the restaurant that day, and I don't know this young woman's name, but she changed such a big part of my life. Because I believe that if she could go the extra mile, I could go the extra mile, and every day I get up with that intention, and every day I know that I can touch a life in a meaningful way, and in that is the greatest hope of all.
In the last half minute, what advice, single piece of advice, to young people?
Be real, be open, be vulnerable, take the risks, realize that, you know, the picture may not be what you think it might be, but you're a whole lot better doing that than pulling inward and covering yourself up and building this wall around you that nobody can penetrate.
Jim Tooman, from the hundreds of thousands of kids and parents who you've really helped, thanks a million.
Thanks for letting me be on this and letting me share my heart with your audience.
Our guest next Sunday will be the president, CEO, and general manager of the Detroit Tigers, Dave Dombrowski. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Stay home.